From 99.9 The Fan, this is The Drive with Tim Donnelly. Sponsored by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at CapitalFinancialUSA.com.
Single-digit days until the NFL draft.
Double, I love the draft.
Double-digit days until the Panthers make a pick.
Well,
but
yes.
But single-digit days to the beginning of the draft. 9 days, seven shows. We have seven episodes of The Drive with Tim Donnelly until the NFL draft starts up. We're going day by day.
Seven.
I love Chappelle. The Chappelle Show, it was a special moment in time. Seven shows, we're going position by position, looking at what they've done this offseason and kind of previewing what could happen during the draft for each position. And today, we are moving just a half step out from where we were yesterday. We were interior defensive line. Now we're edge rushers, maybe more than a half step, a couple yards. Edge rushers. Here's what I have to say about the edge rushers for the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers know that they look dumb if their edge rushers don't get to the quarterback this year. DJ Wonnum and Jadeveon Clowney, their two free agent acquisitions, have to get to the quarterback. Do you know why? Because the Panthers moved on from Brian Burns. And they didn't even get a first-round pick back. If you move on from Brian Burns, you're saying we can find that production elsewhere. We don't have to give him $30 million a year. We can find it somewhere else. Then they brought in Wonnum. They brought on Clowney. So those two are part of the group that has to get it done. And they are the headliners. Right? I use Gladys Knight and the Pips as kind of an example. This is Wonnum, Clowney, and the Pips. The next most accomplished or biggest name edge rusher on the team, Kalyvon Chaisson. He is a former first rounder by the Jags. You want to hear some stats? He has 5 sacks in 4 years. He's averaging a good 1.25 sacks a year. Amari Barno still around. DJ Johnson, should we go down how that pick has worked out?
Don't get me started.
Leota, not a lot of depth. Not much depth. So guess what? If you have a position that is as important as edge rusher, that you made as bold a stance on in this postseason, like moving on from Brian Burns, and there's a draft coming up, guess what? I can connect dots, right? Guess what that tells me?
What's that?
They're going to draft one. They're going to draft one, and they're probably going to look for a veteran after the draft in addition to it. But here's the thing. If the right guy is there in the second round, it's not a bad pick. I know there's a lot of talk about you need to get a wide receiver, and I do think they need to get a wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of talk about some other positions, centers, corners. I hear you. If there's somebody you have a first-round edge rusher grade on, and they're available at 33, that's never a bad pick. Never. And I would tell teams that are calling to trade up, say, listen, there's somebody we want here. If you want to trade up to 33, you have to make it worth our while because there's a position of premium that we could take right now, and it will never be a bad pick. Never. Same is true for 39. They have picked 33 and 39 in the second round, two top 10 in the second round picks. I wouldn't say that they should. They shouldn't take both, right? They shouldn't be two hedge rushers. But if they evaluate someone highly and he's available there, you can take one of them, especially if this wide receiver class is as deep as everybody says it is, they have high rankings on them, and there's 4 or 5 of them available when they're picking at 33, you can be confident one might be there at 39, and you can take your edge rusher at 33. You will not hear me complain about that pick. Think about everything that everybody said about why they had to pay Brian Burns. Because the position is that important, because it is a passing league, because one of the few ways to get a team off schedule, meaning into third and long, into basically positions where a defense has the advantage, is by getting the quarterback on the ground with a sack. It's becoming more important. It's more difficult to guard downfield. The rules are constantly making it more difficult on defensive backs. And the only way sometimes to help those defensive backs is make them guard for 2.5 seconds rather than 3.5 seconds. If Brian Burns up there with a very talented defensive line in New York with the Giants starts making some plays, the Panthers know they're going to have to make plays of their own or else, you know, they're going to be wearing a dunce cap. I would not be surprised if despite all of the, you need this position, you need that position, you need this position, the Panthers simply go best player available if that best player is an edge rusher and then look at everybody else and say we couldn't pass on him. I will not complain about that. If you go best player available and take like a running back or an off-ball middle linebacker or a center, sometimes you will hear me go, I don't care if that's the best player available. You need to think positional importance.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a best player available at edge rusher, you will not hear me complain, even if I think the roster has bigger gaps elsewhere. They'll draft one, so be ready. I would say I'd be very surprised if they go through day two and don't leave with an edge rusher of some kind. Very surprised. Now, you could say, right, the money and the picks, like one of those second-round picks they got back for Brian Burns, if you solve that problem there, then you come out actually winning the trade, right? Then you've saved a ton of money. You spent it on the offensive line. You've bolstered another part of your roster. If you're still getting, you know, 7-8 sacks from whoever else you can pick up there, plus, you know, if Jadeveon Clowney finally lives up to all of his physical potential at this stage in his career, it'd be an interesting step up.
It would.
If he has his first double-digit sack season, then all of a sudden Dan Morgan, you know, put those sunglasses on and go walking around like a cool guy. Him and Dave Canales with all that gel in their hair go around looking like a cool guy.
I have a stat for you from last season.
I love stats.
So to provide a little context here, in terms of total number of sacks, the Carolina Panthers were not very high across the league. Granted, provide some context. They were trailing in a lot of games and teams were running the football, so the opportunity to get sacks was not as high. So you go to what's a stat they have called sack percentage. So number of dropbacks versus the number of times you actually get a sack. Carolina Panthers were 31st in the NFL in sack percentage last year. So just over 5% of the opposing team's dropbacks, they got a sack. So, for example, if the opposing team dropped back 40 times in a game, 40 times to throw the football, the Panthers would have gotten just 2 sacks of those 40 dropbacks. That's it.
And that was with Brian Burns.
That was with Brian Burns.
But I'll also say this. Defensive players feast on passing situations.
Sure.
When the offense helps you get up by double figures and now the other team has to try to throw their way back into it, mm-hmm. You know they're going to drop back. I've used this stat a ton, and it's like I use it because it's comical but also true. The Panthers led for 0 plays in the fourth quarter last year. They had 2 wins, but they both came on game-winning field goals, which means zero games was the other team in a fourth quarter we have to throw to get back in this situation, which makes it very difficult for defenses to keep up the sack numbers because they can't pin their ears back and go, I know you got to throw it.
By the way, the Panthers last season only had 1 strip sack. So when you sack the quarterback, you also force a fumble. They only had 1. It was on the 3rd play of the first game.
I was just
going to
say, was that game 1?
It was 3rd play of the first game. Brian Burns strip sacked Desmond Ridder, and Ridder fell on the football. That's the only time all season it happened.
That's why you draft an edge rusher.
That's why you got to upgrade there.
That's why you draft an edge rusher. They're going to draft one. Where and who? That'll be hashed out in the war room, but they will draft an edge rusher. 7 days, 7 shows, 9 days until the NFL draft. We'll continue to count down.
Seven.
Is that a thing now every time I say 7? All right.
Seven.
Thought I got through it.
Seven.
The NFL draft is coming up. We've been talking about it throughout the day. 9 days away, 7 shows. Don't, and this happens every year, don't let someone else's outrage make you feel like you should be outraged, right? Like, in real life, if you're in like a public situation and someone just stands up and runs away, a lot of people are like, hey, there's something to run from. I'm taking off with them. That's fine. Don't do that in draft world. Somebody's going to stand up and say, Drake May makes some bad decisions. Run away. And they're going to take off. And they're going to run to J.J. McCarthy. And they're going to run to Bo Nix. And they're going to run somewhere else. And I'm going to sit there going, yeah, we know. Did you see the good stuff? Don't be surprised when draft experts, also known as draxperts, is what my brain wanted to say. Don't be surprised when draft experts point out there are flaws in Drake May's game. Like, oh, you watch his tape. Oh, if you watch the highlight film, he looks unreal. But if you watch the complete game, there's a lot that you're not going to like. It's like, yeah, we watched it live. We saw it the whole time. You're telling me there were bad interceptions this year? Guess who was watching it live going, that's a bad interception? Everybody around here. So don't let them discovering what we already knew change the way your opinion was crafted. Because do you know what else we saw? The 5 or 6 plays a game that you can't teach. If a draft expert is selling you on Drake May has a lot to fix, yeah. That's what coaching's for. We watched it all year at UNC. Yeah. And by the way, he looked much better in the decision-making process under different coaches his junior year. We darn sure saw the flaws, but we also saw the reasons why you take a chance on fixing the flaws. Do you know who else had flaws in college? Darn near everybody.
Yeah, hardly anyone's like ready-made, let's go turnkey.
Josh Allen was completing like 56% of his passes at Wyoming.
If that.
Jalen Hurts went in the second round. Patrick Mahomes went behind Mitch Trubisky. No offense, UNC fans. I'm doing a lot of praising a UNC quarterback, so allow me that one jab.
Call what it is.
It's Patrick Mahomes came from this offense. He didn't have to read defenses. Guess what? The shop, LeBron show. They sit in a barber shop and they chat. Patrick Mahomes said publicly. He said like he didn't hide it. This was not he didn't know the mic was hot. He was on a show, and he said he did not know how to read defenses until about halfway through his second year as a starter. Do you know what he did his second year as a starter? He won the Super Bowl. Halfway through that season, he said he didn't know how to read defenses. I'm fine looking at Drake May and saying, yes, he has flaws, and still not running for the door. Now, is he going to be Patrick Mahomes? Is he going to be Josh Allen? Is he going to be Jalen Hurts? I'm not saying that. But I'm saying more and more and more and more, the NFL is about finding the guys that can do the things you can't teach and then trying to teach them the rest. Drake May has the things you can't teach. He has the throws that other guys don't even try to make. And he makes them at an unreal rate. He has the improv. He has the special sauce. He has the sense for the moment. What he doesn't have are things that can be taught. They can be. So there's going to be, I mean, the next 9 days might as well be like shuffling of a deck of cards as far as the quarterbacks go. Right here, we have Adam Schefter. He expects 6 quarterbacks to be drafted just in the first round.
We've been talking about all these teams that need quarterbacks, and we're talking about 6 quarterbacks that potentially could go in the first round. And because of all the teams that need one, to me, that's going to drive up the number of quarterbacks taken in round 1 because of the needs of so many teams. I would be shocked if there weren't 5 quarterbacks taken in round 1. And I think because of all the teams that need one, I think we're going to wind up with 6 when all is said and done.
6 quarterbacks could go in the first round. There's going to be the 3-card Monty card game. It's going to be this one's first, this one's first. The only thing, Caleb Williams is going to go number 1, and everyone's going to put that in every mock. Other than that, it's going to be, which one do you think is going second now?
Mm-hmm.
He's going 5th now. Pick the ones, and I will say this, like, Actually, we'll use a saying from Brandon Bean, the GM of the Bills. He traded up for Josh Allen, 7th overall pick. And he was asked recently if he thought he overpaid for the move up or what he thought of the you know, package that he had to go ahead and give up to move up to Josh Allen. And he goes, you know, it didn't matter. At the time, I knew it didn't matter. If Josh Allen ended up working, it didn't matter how much I paid. And if he didn't end up working, it didn't matter how much I paid. Because if you draft a quarterback in the top 10 and it doesn't work, you probably lose your job. And if you draft a quarterback in the top 10 and it does work, no one's thinking like, well, I wish you didn't give up that extra second rounder to go get him. It just like quarterbacks are pass-fail exercises. They are go, no go. And if you need someone special, the ones I think it is smart to bet on are the ones that do the things you can't teach. I'll use a different personal story. David Sills. I go back to this story all the time.
Oh, yeah. Former quarterback at West Virginia, right?
He was. He was a quarterback at West Virginia, actually then a wide receiver at West Virginia. But before all of that, he was a 13-year-old quarterback that was an eighth grader starting on his high school varsity team and was offered a scholarship at 13 years old by Lane Kiffin at USC.
Yeah.
He was also from the state of Delaware. I was playing at the University of Delaware at the time. He used to come to our 7-on-7s. He used to come to our, like, camps and stuff. And this is when he was 13 years old, and he was the number one ranked recruit in every ranking. He was a quarterback. Ended up playing wide receiver in the NFL for a little bit. Might still be. But I remember thinking, you can't teach this guy anything. I was a college quarterback, right? Had dedicated, like, at the point, like 15 years of my life to becoming a quarterback. I'm going, he knows at least as much as I do. He's 13 years old. He knows at least as much as I do. When he gets to college, how in the world is he going to get better? Right? I mean, I guess he could get stronger, sure. But he was so polished. Meanwhile, if you took me to another guy that was having the same amount of success or having more flash plays because he was physically gifted, and I was like, and he has no idea what he's looking at, I could teach that guy to be so much better. Same is true in the NFL. Same is true in the draft. Same kind of idea. What I mean by that is if you bring someone in that reads every defense perfectly, if you bring someone in that understands everything and he's a coach's dream and he can go up on the board during all the meetings and nail everything and you look at his film and he makes every good decision, then you're looking at the best he's ever going to be. Meanwhile, if you bring in the guy that misses the open wide receiver, granted, you don't want him to, but let's say he does, and he spins out of a tackle, keeps the play alive, runs over to the sideline as he's jumping out of bounds, throws it across his body, and completes a pass that only four guys on the planet could complete. I'm going, I want to bring that guy in. I'll teach him how to find the open receiver on the first read so he doesn't have to do all of that, but I like knowing he can do all of that. That way, if he ever is in a situation where he has to, he can. As long as you think Drake May is the kind of guy that is going to live and breathe football and he's going to work on it and he's going to fix his flaws and he's going to listen to the coaching, you bring in the guy with the special. Don't get surprised that he's not always perfect. We watched it. We saw it. We know. If you watch the NC State game, no one was like, you went into that film thinking you weren't going to see flaws? No, We knew there were some dark moments in that season for Drake May.
It's amazing how so many people expect when someone, even with freshmen in college, how we expect them to just be like ready, baked, made, ready to go, no flaws. You should step in and just be the guy right away, because we see the rare exception of where those guys are like, they step on the court, they step on the field, and they're just instantly just great. Like Adrian Peterson was at Oklahoma. He just plugged him in as a true freshman. Here's 150 yards.
Like, I guarantee you there were plays where he missed the hole and ran for a 60-yard touchdown anyway.
Because he's just physically
He was Adrian Peterson.
Exactly. Like, but not everyone is that. Even going into the NFL, not everyone's that. Caleb Williams, consensus number one overall, there's even still criticism about his footwork and his mechanics and things like that. So, yeah, no
Sometimes
one's going to be
perfect
and ready to go.
Sometimes he jumps when he throws for no reason.
Exactly. Like, why do you do this?
Unbelievable he can make that throw without his feet on the ground, but I don't know why you jumped in the first place. Like, that is special stuff you can't teach. He's another one. I'm not going to nitpick Caleb Williams' film because I see the good and go, goodness gracious.